Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Sound of the Underground. I'm your host, DJ Proof, bringing you the sound of rap, rock, and reggae through the airwaves. I'm dedicated to providing a show that spotlights mainly independent artists who don't get the same hype as mainstream artists just because they have a desire to talk about the social and political issues in our world, and which we face every day. But I also play music that brings good vibes into our lives as well. And I usually like to end my show with some reggae, so I have a great show for you guys today. This is my sixth official show, and I wanted to dedicate this show to my hometown of Seattle because it has such a diverse music scene, and I haven't really had a chance to introduce or debut any Seattle artists on my show at all, so this is going to be exciting for me, and I hope you guys enjoy it as well. Seattle is not particularly known for pumping out artists that are well-known or, you know, a part of the mainstream culture, but at the same time, I think it's just because of the size of the city and it's the diversity of sound that is born out of the Northwest that it doesn't really have any kind of direction or kind of genre that people tend to write to. It's really open-ended, and I think that's what makes it truly unique. But for this show, I'm not going to go too far underground, so to speak. I'm going to play artists who have come from the underground scene and brought that to the mainstream. So in a sense, they were able to break away from the restrictions and censorship that a lot of mainstream artists are subjected to, and they are able to create their own music because they came up from the bottom and they were able to maintain that independently. And it's pretty amazing how they were able to do this. So I have three artists today that I'd love to talk about and play some songs. And to get started, well, this is probably one of the most well-known MCs or rappers of today. And although he is probably one of the newest big-time rappers to hit the main stage, he has been around, in, at least in Seattle, and he's been known in Seattle for the past decade. So I'm sure a lot of people know who I'm talking about. He goes by the name of Macklemore, and his real name is Ben Haggerty, but ever since him and his producer and DJ Ryan Lewis released their sophomore album called The Heist in October 2012, they basically became so popular so quick that everybody in California knew them when I came here last year, and that just surprised me because I always thought of Macklemore as just a Seattle artist, and I never really expected him to become so popular so quickly. But like I was saying, Macklemore and his he has a producer and DJ who works with him named Ryan Lewis, and they started working together in 2006 after Macklemore released his solo studio first studio album called The Language of My World in 2005. And ever since Ryan Lewis joined him, they have created their own sound, which is truly like unique to them, and it doesn't really sound like anyone else. But you can compare them to a lot of Seattle underground hip hop artists today. I think J Pinder, Mackie, Avatar Darko, Soul, Jake One, Fatal Luciano, and Wisdom, who actually went to my high school, shout out to O'Day. They have a lot of influence in Seattle hip-hop culture. And it's not just Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. I mean, they might have put, so to speak, they might have put Seattle hip-hop on their backs and have helped kind of usher in the Seattle music scene into the mainstream. And they're not the first, you know, artists to do this, obviously, but they have definitely had a huge influence on hip-hop, and especially since they are both white Caucasian males, they have a unique stance in what kind of messages they portray in their music. And the song that I want to play today, which I'll talk about in a little bit, has to do with this kind of perspective from them, and it actually is off Macklemore's first album, so this is without Ryan Lewis. And I wanted to kind of stir away from the whole like hype of the Heist album. I mean, I know it was really popular when it came out, and it has a lot of relevant songs, obviously. I mean, some of my favorite songs like Jimmy Iovine or Make the Money, Same Love, all these songs that actually talk about real stuff. What's another one? Let's see. Can't Hold Us is really good, and he talks about drug addiction, drug abuse, and him coming back from that struggle. And the song, let's see, it's called, oh, Neon Cathedral is about his, about drinking. And then I believe Starting Over is about his time going back into rehab. And then he also talks about some relevant stuff in the song called Wings, and it's kind of more anchored toward the whole sneaker community, the sneakerhead community, where a lot of kids are kind of influenced too heavily on brands such as Nike, big brands such as Nike and Jordan and Adidas and all these brands that kind of portray a lot of musicians and athletes as something special or bigger than what they really are just because they wear the label. And it's kind of a hit on the label because a lot of, and Macklemore brings this up in his album, but a lot of people die over these things. They die over, you know, people who collect shoes. It costs a lot of money to maintain that habit, or that not a habit necessarily, but a lot of people do it just for a hobby. And it has become a problem, and I think Macklemore does address that in that the song Wings. But going back to his first album, it also has a lot of relevant stuff, but it was kind of his first, you know, it was his first album, so he dealt with a lot of different creative themes, and some of it was really funny as well. But Macklemore kind of took a kind of more serious route when he started making his verses, when he joined up with Ryan Lewis and he started making EPs and singles instead. And the Verses EP is actually a really great EP. It has song Other Side and Fipasana, which is two of my favorite songs personally. It talks about drug abuse and also opening your mind to, you know, being more creative and being more in control of our own minds and our own, you know, thoughts, our own ideas, instead of being force-fed from the media. So, well, in the background, if you can hear this, this is off the Heist album, and this is just an instrumental called Bomb Bomb, and I thought it'd be appropriate to kind of have as a background toward actually playing the song I want to play off their first album. So the song that I chose is called White Privilege, and this is easily one of the most, I'd have to say, easily one of the most eye-opening songs that Macklemore has ever created, because you probably never heard a song that talks about white privilege at all in the first place. And the fact that he is a white rapper and he has been influenced and inspired by a culture that is traditionally African-American, you know, hip-hop, the fact that he can talk about this on his album and still create such a, you know, positive fan base out of it, that's what people need. That's what these kids need today. It's kind of a voice of reason, a voice of perspective, a different perspective than what they've been taught or what they've seen themselves. You know, it's sharing this experience that Macklemore has gone through in his life and allowing these kids, especially white kids, to kind of participate in this experience and perspective of his. And obviously, I'm going to talk about the song a little bit more when I play it, but you know, go over the lyrics and all that, but in respect for an artist who puts independent Seattle hip-hop on his back, without further ado, I want to introduce to you Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. Actually, no, sorry, Ryan Lewis isn't a part of this song, but now that they're together, it's just a force of habit to say. This is just Macklemore, and the song that I chose is called White Privilege off his first album, Language of My World. I hope you guys enjoy.
I see so many people lost who really try to pretend. But am I just another white boy who's caught on to the trend? When I take a step to the mic, is hip-hop closer to the end? Cause when I go to shows, the majority have white skin. They marketed the windmill, the air flare and head spin. And white rappers' albums really get the most spins. The face of hip-hop has changed a lot since Eminem. And if he's taking away black artists' profits, I look just like him. Claim the culture that wasn't mine, the way of the American. Hip-hop is gentrified and where will all the people live? It's like the Central District, Beacon Hill to the South End, being pushed further away because of what white people did. Now, where's my place in the music that's been taken by my race? Cultural appropriated by the white face. And we don't want to admit that this is existence. Still scared to acknowledge the benefits of our white privilege. Cause it's human nature to want to be part of something different, especially when your ancestors are European Christians. And most whites don't want to acknowledge this is occurring, cause we got the best deal, the music without the burden of being black in a system that really wants you to rock. Cause all you need is a program and you can go and make hip hop. And we hate the mainstream, cause we're the ones that took it. Now we listen to ASAP Rock and wear t-shirts that say Brooklyn. But it's not about black and white, right? I mean, good music is good music regardless of what you look like. But when you don't give them props, isn't that selfish? That's like saying rock was actually started by Elvis. So where does this leave me? I feel like I pay dues, but I'll always be a white MC. I give everything I have when I write a rhyme, but that doesn't change the fact that this culture's not mine. But I'm gonna be me, so please be who you are. This is something that's effortless and it shouldn't be hard. I said I'm gonna be me, so please be who you are. But we still own 40 acres, now we stolen their 16 bars. Hip-hop started off in a block that I've never been to counteract a struggle that I've never even been through. If I think I understand, it's because I flow too. That means I'm not keeping it true, nope. Hip-hop started off in a block that I've never been to counteract a struggle that I've never even been through. If I think I understand, it's because I flow too. That means I'm not keeping it true, I'm not keeping it true.
I don't rap about guns, so they label me conscious. But I don't rap about guns cause I wasn't forced into the project. See, I was put in a position where I could choose my options, blessed with the privilege that my parents could send me to college. Now who's going to shows? The kids in the block starving, or the white people with dough that can relate to my content? Marketed the music and now adapted to the lifestyle. What happened in jazz and rock and roll is happening right now. Where's my place in the music that's been taken by the media, with white corporations controlling what they're feeding you? I brought up Aesop Rock, but I'm not even dissing dude. We love hip-hop, and what do you think the Caucasians are listening to? And I speak freely when I write this. If a black MC examine race, there goes half their fan base, white kids. And this is so true. And we didn't even have to fight the system, we just went and picked up the microphone too. And we got good at it, so we should be rapping. But only supporting them is like burning Jimmy and buying Clapton. Now Clapton's incredible, but no Jimmy, no foundation. So here comes history and the cultural appropriation. White kids with do-rags trying to practice their accents, from the suburbs to the upper class, mastering a language. But hip-hop's not just memorizing words, it's rooted in authenticity, something you literally can't learn. But I'm gonna be me, so please be who you are. It's something that's effortless and it shouldn't be hard. I said I'm gonna be me, so please be who you are. But as I'm blessed with the privilege, they're still left with the scars. Come on. Hip-hop started off in a block that I've never been to counteract a struggle that I've never even been through. If I think I understand, it's because I flow too. That means I'm not keeping it true, nope. Hip-hop started off on a block that I've never been to counteract a struggle that I've never even been through. If I think I understand, it's because I flow too. That means I'm not keeping it true, I'm not keeping it true.
And we're back. That was Macklemore off his solo debut album entitled The Language of My World. and the song was called White Privilege. Obviously, this song probably hits a lot of, heartstrings in some people, because if there's any Caucasian or white listeners listening right now, I mean, you don't hear this very often in music, but most of what he's saying is true. I mean, he's talking about the fact that hip-hop is now a culture that was created by African-Americans, but it is being taken over by, or it's seemingly being taken over by, white artists who are now kind of entering into the culture like Macklemore did. And just to go over one verse, the last part of his first verse, I think it's pretty good. Kind of explains what he's trying to talk about. He says, but it's not about black or white, right? I mean, good music is good music regardless of what you look like. But when you don't give them props, isn't that selfish? That's like saying rock was actually started by Elvis. So where does this leave me? I feel like I pay dues, but I'll always be a white MC. I give everything I have when I write a rhyme. But that doesn't change the fact that this culture's not mine. And the fact that white artists, particularly Eminem, who he also mentions in his song, but Macklemore and Eminem are kind of like on the same level now, it feels like, and not exactly the same level, but Macklemore is definitely rising. And the only reason that these guys get more attention than, say, like Tupac did with his white fans, or Biggie Smalls, or all these guys who made it to the top and who were actually African American. And today, even, like, you never really hear too much of KRS-One on the mainstream, but he talks just as relevant to the issues of today as Macklemore does. And Eminem is, you know, he's kind of crazy, but he can rap and he can talk about some real stuff sometimes. But at the same time, these guys were inspired by the ones who started it. And it's all because the reason that they're in the spotlight more than African American hip hop artists are is because of the mainstream culture that kind of perpetrates the image of white America onto society. And people like Macklemore, who aren't afraid to speak out about this and, you know, talk about this in his own album, you know, that's really honorable to me. And I think a lot of people need to hear this. It's not just something he's expressing freely. It's something kids and adults need to hear in this country, because it's true. And I think it brings up more discussions about the issue instead of just leaving it be. So you're listening to the one and only Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. You just heard the song White Privilege by Macklemore. And before I move into the next portion of my show, I just kind of want to talk about and address a little bit more about Macklemore and his career. I actually got to see Macklemore, I think, perform live 3 times. And one was at Bumper Shoot in 2011, which is a music festival in Seattle. And then he performed on stage, on the same stage as Wiz Khalifa. So it was a big stage, main stage at Key Arena. And that was pretty cool. I wasn't up front, but I got to see them, and it was cool. But Macklemore, before that, Macklemore actually played at one of the winter balls I was invited to, and that was awesome. That was really close up. And the kind of atmosphere and energy that he brings to his live performances are amazing, because he's just one man, and Ryan Lewis is behind him making the music happen, but he's rapping constantly and bringing energy that you can just feed off. So if you ever get a chance to see these guys live, be sure to do so. And Macklemore actually came to my high school and talked about his career. And I got to sit right next to him, which was cool, but didn't have time to talk to him really or interview him about anything. He's just a genuine guy, and he's been through a lot, especially his personal issues with drugs and alcohol. But the fact that he's emerging as an artist, and he's, you know, he's really pursuing his dreams and making making efforts to stop his own drug abuse and alcoholism. So respect to this man. And let's see, the first song that he actually was featured in was back in 2000 or 2001, I think, and he was featured by the hip-hop group, the Seattle hip-hop group called The Physics, who actually graduated from my high school as well. So that's pretty cool. You know, it's all connected in Seattle. It's really kind of a small city, but a lot of the artists, pretty much all of the artists, know each other and they collab with each other. So I think Seattle's kind of on the rise, especially in hip-hop. But moving on to the next portion of my show, you can expect to see Macklemore in the future for sure. There's no doubt about that. So there's not much to say about him. I just hope people are more aware of the songs that he can really express his true feelings of, you know, talking about real stuff instead of just what I like to call corny songs that are more just focused on the music instead of the lyrics. But, you know, moving on, for the rock portion of my show, I wanted to play another iconic Seattle artist, whose underground sound of Seattle's own grunge genre made them so popular that they were considered mainstream only because of their popularity. But the messages in the musical style is clearly burst from an underground rock culture. And this is coming out of the 80s and 90s, early 90s, where it was kind of a turning point for heavy metal. And it kind of moving away from the classic heavy metal like Metallica and Guns N' Roses, which dominated most of the mainstream. But this is a kind of a move into a subculture, which is perfect for this band, because this band was able to write gritty songs and had a flux between kind of soft and hard sounds in their verses and choruses that gave them a sound that was pretty much unique to the ears of everybody around the world, which is why they became so famous, I think. And I guarantee that most people in this country know the band Nirvana. Their name is about as iconic as their music itself, I think. And even if people didn't grow up listening to them, they have definitely heard of the band, or they've heard at least one of their songs. And the reason I chose Nirvana for my second piece is, I mean, obviously they're one of the biggest bands in this country, or to ever emerge from the United States. And that was a lot of pressure on them, I think, just because they were, well, Kurt Cobain and the bassist for Nirvana, Chris Novoselic, they both went to high school together in Aberdeen, Washington, which is kind of more toward the coast, and it's definitely a smaller town compared to Seattle, obviously, but it's more of a town aspect, a town feel, and it's definitely more right-wing conservative than anything. So Kurt Cobain has always talked about how he grew up and just felt like he just felt completely different from everyone else there, because they didn't accept anyone else from outside that town back then. And obviously I've been to Aberdeen, I've driven through it, and it's a nice little town. It's not high class or anything, but it's definitely out there in the toward the woods, and you can see, you know, just by the town feel, that they're kind of, you know, separate from the urban and suburban lifestyle. So they're not really subjected to the new kind of cultures that emerge, and, you know, such as hip hop. But that doesn't really, it's not really relevant to that time, I think, because what was really coming out of that time period of late 80s and 90s, definitely hip hop was rising, but it was really young. And this was just a change in the genre of rock, because Nirvana was the kind of band that was able to change rock to alternative rock in mainstream, and they really did bring alternative and grunge rock to the mainstream single-handedly, almost. That's how popular they were. And although there are a lot of bands from Seattle that, you know, don't get recognized or, I would say they don't get the same kind of recognition as Nirvana did, but Nirvana is a special band. You can't really compare them to other bands because of their sound. They really were unique, and it really all stemmed from Kurt Cobain, because he was the front man, and he wrote pretty much all the songs for them. And this was just a three-person band. In the end, it became a three-person band. At one point, they did have a guitarist, but he left, I think, in right after their first album or something like that. But in the beginning, when it was just Cobain and Novoselic, they started, well, they moved to Olympia, I believe, around Tacoma and Olympia, in search of a drummer. And it took them a couple years, and they went through at least four drummers before Dave Grohl was recommended by Buzz Osborne from the frontman for the Melvins. Buzz Osborne recommended Dave Grohl to Nirvana, and I mean, it just worked out. They said in the first couple minutes they knew that Dave Grohl was perfect fit for them. And Dave Grohl left his Washington, D.C. band called the Hardcore Punk Screams, and I mean, he basically became the permanent drummer after that, after coming to Seattle and just playing with them for a little bit. It's pretty amazing how quick they were able to get along together. And this is before they released their second album. Dave Grohl came right after they finished their first album called Bleach. And this is when they were considered sub pop, and this is it's a kind of genre that it's like below pop. It's kind of a poppy sound, but it's definitely different, and it's more, you know, grunge, obviously, which is what they became with their second album, Nevermind, which was released in 91. Nirvana's Nevermind album actually was their most successful album in the sense of sales. I mean, they sold 11.5 million in the U.S. and 30 million worldwide. So clearly, the numbers speak for themselves. But I mean, a lot of people have different preferences about what they like and what kind of Nirvana songs they like. But I think the Nevermind album is kind of the epitome of what grunge alternative rock sounds like, through the, you know, voice and sound of Kurt Cobain and the rest of the band. And the song that I want to play is off Nevermind. So just to kind of connect everyone to the grunge sound of Seattle, and how, just to show you what kind of sound was able to bring grunge into the mainstream. This is a not necessarily one of their most popular songs, but it definitely is a popular song. The song is called In Bloom. And without further ado, I'm going to play it for you guys right now. So enjoy.
Kids for food.
we are back. I hope everyone enjoyed that song. That song was called In Bloom by Nirvana off their second album, Nevermind, released in 91. So I chose this song because it has such an upbeat chorus and I just love the drums. It's a really catchy song, but it also talks about the kind of people who this is Kurt Cobain wrote this song, and from what I gathered, what kind of information I gathered and just listening to the lyrics, it's kind of about people who just go through the motions of their own life without regard for anyone else. And the title In Bloom, I think it refers more to a younger audience because they're just learning, you know, to kind of blossom in their own lives. But there are a lot of people that are lost and that seem to just be complete robots in this, you know, society. But it's not necessarily their fault. I think this song kind of just subtly talks about how the real issue is more of a corruption of society. And the man portrayed in the lyrics, it goes, he's the one who likes all our pretty songs, and he likes to shoot his gun, and he likes to sing along, but he knows not what it means. And I mean, he knows not what it means, that's the last line. And he likes to shoot his gun is just a criticism of how, even though there is this beauty and appreciation for music to be admired, there's still people out there who, no matter what they listen to or what they hear, it's kind of like it goes through the other ear, and they really don't know what it means, or they don't look for meaning in everyday life and through other people. It's just all about them. So I think that's a great song that kind of talks about that in a upbeat kind of rocky way, hard rock way. Definitely one of their more heavy songs. Nirvana started off, like I said, as a sub-pop genre band, with influence by bands like the Pixies, the Melvins, also a Seattle band, Sonic Youth, Mudhoney, and Black Sabbath. But they quickly developed their own grunge their grunge sound that has influenced bands coming right after them and has influenced a lot of people, even hip-hop. I mean, I've heard a lot of songs where they mention Kurt Cobain and his, you know, he has a lot of influence just in general, our culture in general. And I mean, these guys were worldwide famous. I think they went six times platinum for this album in Canada or something like that. And I mean, they went platinum in so many different countries besides the U.S. that it's astonishing. I can't even list them all. And this is only after three albums, just three studio albums that they released. I mean, unfortunately, as many people know, the band's journey ended when Kurt Cobain committed suicide in 94 in his Seattle home. But, I mean, at least this is what we're told happened. From all the documentaries and interviews that I heard, I heard that Cobain was actually starting to pick himself up and enjoy his life again, kind of moving from the kind of depressing sound that they were creating, and he was starting to, you know, appreciate life and his life with his daughter. But apparently his wife Courtney Love was kind of crazy and he was trying to get away from her. But I mean, I really don't know the details or the truth behind it all. I just like to kind of keep an open mind about things, and I hate to think that such an amazing artist would kill himself, but it happens. And Nirvana's legacy will always live on, and they're definitely one of my favorite bands in the whole world, probably. But you know, I think Nirvana is just the kind of band that anyone can relate to. Not a lot of people like their sound, but I think a lot of people appreciate the kind of messages and their unique way of writing music. It's so simple, but it's still so effective and so, you know, strong at the same time. So before I get into my the third portion of my show, I'm just going to take a little break, let people go to the bathroom if they want, and I'm going to also go to the bathroom myself. So be right back, folks. You're listening to the one and only Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. Sorry for that interruption, guys. I'm back. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, DJ Proof, and you are listening to the sound of the underground right now. So far, I have introduced Macklemore, Seattle artist Macklemore, and Nirvana. And for the third part of my show, I always like to end with a reggae artist. So I'm going to introduce you all kind of a recently discovered band from Seattle who it's not purely reggae, but it's definitely considered reggae at the same time. I think it's similar to maybe a neo reggae rock band, kind of similar to maybe Tribal Seeds, Simplified, Iration, or like Sashimone. But I don't know too much about these guys. I just kind of know their beginnings, and I'm not exactly sure where they're going right now, but at the same time, these guys are pretty amazing with their sound. So, to start it off, kind of want to talk about how the band was formed. The band was formed by two guys, Ian Ayers, I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name, but I believe it's Ayers, from the band The Cause. He joined with Chris Molina from Untold Theory because both projects kind of fell through the floor, and they came together to create the band called Northwest Suns in 2009. And Northwest Suns is definitely more of a reggae-influenced rock band, but it's not heavy at all. It's definitely more, you know, it's more melodic and reggae-sounding than anything, so... I can't really classify it as anything but reggae, with influence from maybe rock and ska. So after, basically after Ayers and Molina got together, they're both guitarists and songwriters, by the way, they came in contact with Art Arzaga, and he was the percussionist for them for a while. And I believe he still is, actually, but he's not the main percussionist right now. They began playing local events together in Washington State and places like Ocean Shores and Aberdeen around there, which is where Nirvana first started. But eventually they caught the attention of two Seattle artists. One was drummer Brett Bailey and bassist Eric Madsen. And together they formed and completed the formation of Northwest Sons, because all they needed was a real drummer. Because I think Art Arzaga was more of a producer than a percussionist himself. He helped produce the songs at first, but together they formed the Northwest Sons, and I love the name because Seattle is part of the Northwest, and even Oregon is, but I think it's just a cool way to represent the part where my home is originally from. So they began working on their album, their first album, which was highly anticipated because they've been at least highly anticipated in their local area, because they've been playing in venues, you know, such as the Showbox, Columbia City Theater, the Nectar Lounge, Jazz Bones, and the King Cat Theater. And these are all local Seattle venues. But after a West Coast tour, where they kind of gained some experience and inspiration from the people they met along the way, they took on their first album called Boundary Line, which released in 2010. And it's a good album, and it gained a lot of local popularity for them. But it really kind of triggered a quick release of their second album, which I think really kind of caps their creative style. And their second album, which was titled Out of the Rain, it came out only a year later from Boundary Line. So, I mean, 2011 it came out, and Brett Cummings is a local saxophone player who actually joined the band before they released Out of the Rain. So when Cummings came along, I think he brought more of a ska rock style to the band, because a lot of ska bands use horns, and a saxophone player is really, it just sounds perfect for reggae, in my opinion. I would call it ska reggae or something like that. But, and this, the song that I want to play is off their second album, Out of the Rain, because I think it combines all the sounds that makes it truly unique to them. So, without further ado, these guys are pretty new, and I just love their sound. It just brings good vibes to the soul, and just allows you to kick back and relax, forget about all the troubles in your life right now, and just enjoy the sound. So, without further ado, this song is called Swimming in the Sound, and the band is called Northwest Sons. Enjoy.
Don't mind when it's wetter. Oh yeah. out of town. Waves are rolling in the sound. Oh, yeah. The bottle is half empty. I'll swim in if you let me. Oh, yeah. My clothes tattered, my shoes old. But I share in the stories they hold. In the deep is where I'm found. 'Cause today I'm swimming in the sound.
Back, folks. I'm gonna let the song kind of play out. It has a nice background sound of ocean waves. But you just heard the song called Swimming in the Sound by the Seattle reggae band known as Northwest Suns on their second album entitled Out of the Rain. And you just heard that on the one and only Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. This song is one of the many kind of laid-back jams that they create, but at the same time, they don't completely stray away from talking about relevant stuff. I mean, one of the songs off the same album is called Uniform, and it's kind of a criticism of the way people dress just to look professional in the eyes of other people. And, you know, I personally believe in freedom of expression, you know, dressing however you want. Being yourself and not letting like not letting other people or other people's judgments kind of cloud your own vision. So, I mean, that's just one example, but this band is, you know, they're really young, and as far as I know, I don't know too much about them, but I know that they've played alongside similar bands like Tribal Seeds, B Foundation, Mike Pinto, and the San Diego band Stranger and Stick Figure. And actually, their first album, Boundary Line, made it onto iTunes 200 Noteworthy and New List on the reggae genre. Plus, they've played at Seattle's Hemp Fest, and I don't think they've played at Bumper Shoot, but they've definitely played all over the city. So they're still more connected to the Seattle scene than the national scene, and that's why they're kind of underground, and there's no real biography on them. It's just kind of, you know, some facts about them, and I haven't seen them play live or anything, but I assume that they're great live, and they actually have some YouTube videos of them playing live, so check that out if you're interested. They have a lot of other great songs that you can jam to and vibe to. So once again, that was Northwest Suns, Seattle reggae band, and the song you heard was Swimming in the Sound. So as far as I know now, the band members are kind of rumored to go their separate ways, but you know, you never know with bands these days and what really goes on in the interpersonal, you know, relationships that they have together. You can't really trust the blogs and the media all the time. So it's possible that we can expect to hear more from the Northwest Suns later on. It just seems like right now the fire's kind of died, but they're such a great band, and I think they have the potential to be great and maybe nationally known someday. They just got to work for it, and hopefully we can see them later. So before I go, I didn't have a chance to really do my quote of the day or anything, but I wanted to talk about a news story, which is really, really interesting. This is off NBC News. It goes, this is about Afghanistan and its kind of strive to recreate itself and become more of a, you know, a country where people are feel safe to live in. So despite, this is off the article, it says, despite decades of conflict in Afghanistan and several recent militant attacks, the country's capital, Kabul, is home to a vibrant youth scene of musicians, artists, athletes, and activists. Shopping malls and cafes stand in the city, which is nonetheless beset by, infrastructure problems and instability. Afghanistan is preparing for an election on April 5th that should mark the first democratic transfer of power in the country's history, but has been hit by a tide of violence as the Islamic Taliban movement has ordered its fighters to disrupt the vote and threaten to kill anyone who participates. So clearly there's a lot of turmoil going on in Afghanistan, which has been that way for a long time. But I think it's pretty amazing that music, art, and activism is kind of the counter, a good way of reversing the violence. So it's a good way of bringing art and understanding, kind of human understanding, into the whole mess and giving people a chance to kind of express themselves naturally and artistically instead of taking up arms necessarily. So that was a new article. I thought that was pretty cool. And before I go, I want to give a shout out to all the performers at Soul Candy last night. It was held here at Dominican's Angelico Hall. It was pretty entertaining to watch. I didn't get to see every act, but from what I saw, it was great. And big shout out to Mr. Borowski, who graduated from Dominican. Not sure when, but he graduated from Dominican, and this week he announced a donation of $25 million to help support the entire school. So that's a huge donation, and we're really excited about that because this school definitely needs a little bit more support on the social side, and I think a lot of it's going into the business school, but you know, anything to help improve this small school is a great feat in my mind. So this concludes the show for the day, but join me next Thursday on the Sound of the Underground, and we can enjoy the miracle of real music together again. But until next time, I'm your host, DJ Proof, bringing you this truth from the booth on the one and only Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. I hope everyone enjoys their day off tomorrow for Cesar Chavez Day, and I wish everyone a great weekend. This is DJ Proof signing off. Have a great weekend, folks.
Must be the ones who start to to mold a new reality. Closer to the heart. Closer to the heart.